a two-day engagement. We've got a lot to cover. We had a very good engagement with the NPA yesterday, in my view. We met them in the head. So hopefully the next 2 weeks we'll follow that trend. But we're looking forward to your presentation. We may as well also tell you we had a brief presentation by the Auditor General's office. And they covered some of the ground that's in your report. They gave us this very colourful document. You know, us politicians, we need a lot of help with these things. They're going to do it in a coloured chart. And that's where your department is. But it's just one yellow there. Which is supposed to be a good thing, I'm told. So the green arrow. Anyway, let me hand over to you, and perhaps we can begin. Welcome, Mr. Fanny.
Thank you.
Bring in your hands. Yes, you see what I mean.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to the honourable members, good morning, Chair, and colleagues. And thank you for inviting us to present our annual report.
Thank you.
ignore them if I do my things in that order.
Well, they have forgiven Parliament already, so they are ready to start. Thank you, Chair. Those were the introductions I wished to make. Then going through the presentation, Chair, the content will cover the introduction, and it's going to be quite a substantial introduction. Then we'll go through quality updates, organizational performance over time, and then we'll go through the programs. As I indicated, with your indulgence, prefer to go through program one in detail and program two if we are lucky. And then tomorrow we'll do program three, which is taking up services, and then conclude. We would be happy to take questions, Chair, as and when guided by the Chair in doing that. Our vision remains a transformed and accessible justice system which promotes and protects social justice, fundamental human rights, and freedom. Our mission is we commit to provide transparent, responsive, and accountable justice for all. Our principles and values and its commitment to constitutional values and the culture of human rights, the constitutive principles, good governance, Ubuntu, professionalism, and continuous improvement, as well as open communication. Our strategic goals, as a department, we have a critical mandate of ensuring that justice is realized by all South Africans and all people in South Africa in line with our constitution within the constitutional democracy. In promoting this, the government continued in the period under review with the pursuance of the following strategic goals. One is the increased accountability, effectiveness, and efficiency of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, and that's just looking at our own internal operations. Two is improved effectiveness and efficiency of delivery services, and that is going to be translated through by the people who receive our services, whether they are efficient or not. The transformed legal services to protect and advance the interests of government as well as citizens and promote constitutional development. Effective coordination of the JCPS cluster in the delivery of outcome three, which is all people in South Africa are and feel safe. In terms of the legislative mandate, we still are responsible and obligated to delivering our services within the legislative framework, and of course there are various instruments that guide us in doing that. So one of the things that we must do is the establishment and functioning of superior courts, magistrate courts, and special courts, the establishment and functioning of bodies such as those that are responsible for legal aid, law reform, the rules of court, rules for court of law, then the technical support to Chapter 9 institutions which continue to provide, in particular the Human Rights Commission as well as the Public Protector. Of course, we do support the Gender Commission. We still do make ourselves available as well as and when required. The appointment of the Master of High Court and the administration of the Guardian Fund, the states as well as in some states. The provision of legal advisory services to government, the enforcement of people's rights in terms of PAJA, PAIA, as well as PIPUDA, and the protection of vulnerable groups in terms of Child Justice Act, Sexual Offences and Related Matters, the Maintenance Act, the Domestic Violence Act, and the related legislation. In terms of transformation of state legal services, in the previous financial year, Cabinet approved broad principles and underpinned the transformation of state legal services. The aim of these principles is to overhaul the state legal services in order to provide services of the highest standard that protect and safeguard the interests of the state and advance access to justice for all. During the year under review, we published we had published the document, and we received the comments on the document that we had published. We've worked quite substantively on those comments and trying to factor in operational requirements that are suggested in the comments that we have received, which have resulted in the finalization of the amendments to the State Attorney's Act in order to give effect to the first element of the transformation of state legal services, which is the human and institutional arrangements relating to the appointment of the board. And in particular, however, they will, whoever gets appointed in the final analysis will deal primarily in the first instance with the transformation of the state attorneys and how we do work as the state attorney profession. Secondly, the capacitation of the Office of the Chief Justice. We continue to assist the Office of the Chief Justice to establish a truly independent judiciary. And in the year under review, a number of things happened. We are grateful to Parliament for the 17th Constitution Amendment, the Superior Court Act, and then we finalized, and really we are grateful for that because it gives us a platform to move with the next step that requires those two amendments and legislation. The Secretary General, as you know, for that office was appointed, and she has started in earnest with the work, the planning, the strategic plan, and the like, the annual operational plan, and so in not too distant the future, I'm sure the committee is hearing from her in her own right. In addition, Chair, behind the scenes, we did a lot of engagement with the National Treasury in order to be able to get the Office of the Chief Justice its own vote so that it can be an independent office from the Standards General as a whole. In addition now to that, we also appointed the Chief Executive of SAGE, who, among others, has started with the training. Chair, you would recall that SAGE has not done training since it was established. There were a number of governance issues that had to be resolved, so we had to push the issue that the Chief Executive be appointed, and we are grateful that that has happened. So they started with a number of training, whether it's day training or workshops of sorts. In the previous year, we had only trained quite a few magistrates, but that was, judges, but that was strictly speaking through an arrangement with Justice College. But this year, those numbers didn't reflect their own numbers. And we had pegged the target relatively low, given the fact that there were those governance issues that had not been finalized. But now with those governance issues being finalized, the targets for the coming year are going to be somewhat different from the previous year's target. JCPS cluster chair, a lot of work went through the fight against fraud and corruption within the cluster in particular. As of yesterday, we had a massive workshop just looking at our own systems of government as to what makes the fight against corruption not to take off in a manner that we had wanted it to take off within the JCPS cluster department in particular. But also that workshop was intended to also assist us in ensuring that the systems and controls within our own department are standardized, so that we can also benchmark those systems. We introduced something called a peer review within the cluster, peer review mechanisms that will assist us in knowing whether we are making progress as individual departments within the cluster and as a cluster in general. We also made major progress compared to the previous years in terms of just finalizing the cases dealing with corruption, which cases are dealt with under the anti-corruption task team banner, where all departments related to crime fighting, corruption fighting are represented. Criminal investigations have been recorded as against 242 accused persons in 89 priority cases involving serious corrupt incidences. These involved the target of 5 million, and we believe that once all of those are finalized, we will reach the target. I must indicate as early as now that, and I'm not sure what the NPA said, but just looking at the hardcore numbers, we are really worried about meeting the target of 100 people convicted for violations or corrupt activities up to 5 million. And that's just because of the time it takes to investigate those cases. As I say, one of the reasons of yesterday's workshop was to just go back and look and say, where else can we start so that we improve on that. Two persons were acquitted and charges were withdrawn against 18 accused persons, while 22 persons have already been convicted. And I think that that was one published in the past. Chair, you recall that we had indicated that we were going to focus on the integrated justice system program, and we had indicated that we at some point wish to come and explain what each of the areas relate to. We remain available, Chair, to come and explain that. And it's the area of work that has not gone very well in the past however many years, I think since 2006, but we've kind of gone back and dusted it up and work is in progress, literally. And I can assure this community that we know our story on this one going forward. Part of what we had to do last year was to investigate the re-establishment of the sexual offences court, which was done and what was presented. We started in earnest the re-establishing them, the sexual offences court. I mean, in addition to that, we've established what we call a blueprint for sexual offences court, and we are saying at least this year, the current year, we will have 9 that will meet the blueprint, and then others will phase. We will ensure that they are upgraded up to a blueprint model, obviously resources permitting, over a period of a year. We have that project, which is the assessment of the impact of decisions taken by the Constitutional Court as well as the Supreme Court of Appeal. We did report that we had made an appointment, and we did. I think we probably said that publicly. Let me recheck that. We have since made an appointment, and the service provider is going to start in earnest with the research in this current financial year. But all the governance issues now have been dealt with on that project. Part of what we had to do after the tabling of the National Development Plan to Parliament, and of course after it had been widely discussed within government, we had to go back and look at areas of our work that are affected by the National Development Plan and how we can do our work differently. Part of what we did, Chair, is that you will see when we deal with the annual performance plan for this year as well as the strategy document, you will see that once those documents are tabled, that we've now factored quite significantly areas that are going to respond directly to the National Development Plan. But basically, in the main, the National Development Plan relates to and deals with a safe South Africa that needs a strong criminal justice system. And it recognizes that a lot of work was done through the criminal justice the review process, and a 7-point plan was adopted in 2007, and that we continue to implement the 7-point plan. And basically, we are going to be continuing with that work and obviously making improvements in terms of the 7-point plan. Many of the initiatives, such as the regional court protocols, are already in place, and most of them are already being implemented, Chair, and we are beginning to see improvements. And the delivery agreement is really being realized. I must say, Chair, that as I said before, we report on a quarterly basis, strictly speaking, on the issues of the delivery agreement, which speak to the issues of the 7-point plan that the National Development Plan speaks to, and we are quite comfortable that we are going to be able to turn that around. Chapter 13, Chair, of the National Development Plan deals with a capable state. areas when we were talking about transforming the state legal services, we were in part responding to them as well. But also the transformation of the creation of the Office of the Chief Justice speaks to that. But our ongoing work around Chapter 9 institutions and strengthening them and their ability to do that work also talks to a capable state, because with all those building blocks to a capable state and building capacity in our own department as well, we'll respond to what a capable state will be able to do individually in terms of the expectation of South Africans. We've also done a lot of work internally in the department, but also through the JPTS cluster in promoting accountability and fighting corruption, and in our work in terms of transforming society and uniting the country. I think through the Human Rights Commission work and through the public protector work, we do contribute to that, other than in addition and more specifically through the judiciary. Chair, last year we also focused quite extensively on turning the plight of the LGBTI community around. About two or three weeks ago, we had a workshop with all participants who were invited, except those who apologized. And I'm talking about NGO, CEO, community organizations. They all came to Pretoria. We had a two very fruitful two-day workshop on the deliverables. Each of the deliverables of that workshop are going to go to the basic health cluster in the November cycle, which will be the first Tuesday of November for approval, and then they will start the cabinet process. The most critical issue, Chair, is that we've, among others, institutionalized a number of structures on the ground where the violations happen, where the abuses happen, that we call them rapid response teams. Those rapid response teams will have to be, once the approval has been received of the products that are going to come out in November, those will then be spread out countrywide, so that we try and prevent the sketch that has been obtaining on the ground against the LGBTI community. In addition, Chair, we've done a lot of radio interviews, public awareness campaigns, just to ensure that people are becoming more and more aware of the LGBTI community and that there is less and less discrimination that happens in that environment. We've also done a situational analysis in terms of just the overall treatment of cases within the criminal justice system of the LGBTI community, how quickly these cases are moving, where are these cases in the system. And now we've combined a document with information, and what we are now doing is we are analyzing each case, what are the difficulties with each case, but at least we have a database of all the cases in the system. And from that workshop, the LGBTI community concluded that they will assist us with additional cases that we still did not have in the list. And we believe that the working relations have improved. Finally, we are hoping, all things working according to our own planning, that during the 16 days of activism against abuse of women and children, we will also convene a conference on LGBTI and ensure that we table for comments and a draft policy document related to that. In terms of international agreements, mutual legal assistance, we were involved in direct liaison and negotiations at administrative and technical level with foreign states to promote international legal cooperation and the possible inclusion of extradition and mutual legal assistance agreements. Conclusion, sorry, Chair. During the year under review, South Africa concluded negotiations on treaties for extradition and mutual legal assistance with the Republic of Belarus as well, and the Socialist Republic of Vietnam. The treaty documents have been referred to the state law advisors to determine whether they are compatible with domestic law and our constitution, and we hope to conclude that. that work in the economy that current financial year. So in terms of country report, the Honourable House would recall that we were lagging somewhat behind on that, but the committee would also recognise that we had stepped up to the plate and we are working very hard to ensure that we improve our country reporting. A lot of work has been done during the year under review in the actual writing of the document, but we then realized towards the end of the financial year that we didn't have a proper governance structure as government to manage how we write country reports. It's left to the devices of departments, and we've decided to, and we recommended to the JCPS cluster that, and it has approved, as well as the ICPS cluster, the formation of a call it capacity that will do nothing else but focus on the writing of country reports, which we will then contribute to. Chair, then going to the organizational overview of how we have done over the years, in terms, in particular, of our first objective, which is strengthening governance within the department and strengthening the accountability of the department. Chair, over the past 7 years, we had not seen the beauty and not had a feeling of how it feels to have an unqualified audit. So most of us who had worked in the department for less than 7 years would not have known how that feels. We, even prior to the 7 years, I think we had an unqualified audit just for that year. Prior to that, we were also struggling. We were on and off on the qualification story. So we focused, as this Honourable House knows, on improving administration towards an unqualified audit. And this has been a journey and continues, Chair, to be a journey. We are not saying that we are where we want to be. We want to at least maintain this and improve this outcome going forward, but we really are destined towards working on a clean audit in the next few years to come. And of course, we will deal with that when we tailor our strategy in February next year. We had a final breakthrough, Chair, on one fundamental area that had worried us for years and continues to worry us. Whilst the results are not good on the third-party fund, but we've managed a huge breakthrough with the Auditor General, and I really want to spend a bit of time explaining what that breakthrough entails. Over the years, the Auditor General could not place reliance on our figures, the vote figures, as a result of the contamination by the third-party fund. So they gave us areas, seriously, many, many areas that they needed us to address, which we have been addressing over the period. And one of the things that we did was to create capacity to develop financial statements. Now, the financial statements, when they are tabled, you will see they are not good. I am not suggesting they are good, but at least they are there now. We've done 4 years in running now. We've been preparing financial statements. But when I say 4 years, I think the community must also appreciate that one of 1 year we prepared at least three financial statements in 1 year. So you would not have had the time to do the improvement in year that you would otherwise do to prepare the financial statement for the year. So we condensed that period so that we could achieve a certain outcome. We knew that the results were not going to be good, but we wanted that, whether the results of the financial statements are good, but we wanted what was an overall objective for us was to say we do not want this thing to continue contaminating the books, because the credibility of the department depends on the books, less on the CPF. Having done this, so those financial statements are done, audited by the Auditor General. We will then table them once we finalize the annual report on them. Secondly, we cleaned out the controls environment. We still have issues, Chair. I'm not suggesting we don't, but we created stability in that environment. we created capacity, we appointed new people to work in that environment. We are converting, remember when we came last time, we said we created a number of positions on a contract basis. We have now converted most of those positions, but not all of them, on a permanent appointment, and that's a journey going forward. There are two areas that we have not made progress, and there's a very clear reason, and I will cover them when I give you the presentation further, where we indicate areas that we are less than 49% achievement. It's in this area, too. It's in the system, developing a system. We've just finalized, we didn't make it in terms of finalizing the specification of the new system. We're not able to finalize it within the financial year, and therefore we did not perform well in the system's part. As well as just finalizing the greater part of other elements of control, which then brought us to underperformance in this area. But overall, we think that we've made a significant breakthrough, and we think we are unlikely to regress. We can only improve the outcomes of CDF going forward. So having indicated that, just again recalling where we were in 2008 as a department, everything was right in 2008. In 2009, we made significant improvements because then we had three green faces. In 2010, we maintained three green faces, but the performance side in 2010 declined quite significantly for the reasons that I explained then. In 2011, we improved the green faces, and we were very happy, but we were very upset about the red face remaining. So in 2012, we no longer had the red face, and we are praying, we are working very hard, we are pleading with people in order to maintain that and to improve the overall opinion, which still is iffy, if I may put it that way. many years we had centralized EFT, so we were not paying the turnaround in terms of how we were paying EFTs, electronic fund transfer. We were not paying in good time, and now we've increased that, and you will see the numbers once we get to that relevant section, how much have we been paying and over how long a period. But Chair, if you even look at that bullet point, during the year under review, we were able to pay 110 million, 110.5 versus the previous year. The 9.1 million that we paid during March 2011. Within the Guardian Fund, Chair, I'd like to just highlight this because it's an error on our part. We had said in the Guardian Fund we had performed 100%, and I think it was just at 94%, which was just an error. But when we read the annual report again, in spite of various reasons of the annual report, we realized that we still made an error there, and we apologize for that error. But either sense, we still performed very, very well in the current fund for the year under review. We will produce an erratum chain just to correct that situation. Over 4 million court records have already been digitized. The committee will remember the DJP Mojabelo letter that complained bitterly about court records not being accessible. That project was at a glitch at that point. We went back, we refined the project, and we are really proud of the progress we have made. But we are now working towards an administrative process that will sustain this work going forward beyond the tenure of that contract. We've moved the contract, as members would know, to other high volume courts where we thought we needed traction in terms of storing those records. And we are comfortable with the progress we have achieved. On the people side of things, we did a lot of work in terms of just assisting in establishing the commission on the strategic defense package. This web chair, of course I can say this in this room, gave us a lot of because every time a commission is established, we have to second a lot of our people to go and do it, which is why sometimes our indicators then don't get met. Because every time there's a commission, we send people until the commission can appoint its own people, which takes a reasonable time. But we are comfortable now that the commission has started its work and is progressing very speedily, and hopefully it will be able to produce a report in a time that it has agreed with the Honourable President. Similarly, there has been ongoing work with the Marikana Commission of Inquiry, which does take a lot of time, considerable time, whether we spend the time in court, whether we spend the time preparing for court, and whether we spend the time administratively advising, guiding, and all of that. But we are comfortable that that commission too is progressing as it was planned. It might just overrun its time and activities, but it is progressing. We also managed to render a lot of health and wellness services for our employees. Excuse me, from 2,399 employees, despite the non-availability of EAP services at a particular point in the year, because I think the EAP services providers lapsed at a particular point, and DPSA took a bit of time to reinstate those services, but we are running full steam in supporting our employees and chain. I would perhaps pause here and also indicate that one of the issues that we have looked at as a department in terms of the sexual offences court that has just been introduced is how do we support the judiciary that presides the prosecution as well as the support staff that would be exposed to those cases. How do we ensure that this process supports them as well, and more specifically? Then one of the biggest challenges we faced last year is that there was a secular by DTSA to upgrade certain levels of our organization up to Zadlani level 5. Now, what that did is that one, it was unbudgeted for, and it meant that in terms of the number of the Department of Justice, we had to upgrade 7,288 employees. And that has already been done, because before we knew it, we were already hit with a number of labor issues for the delays in finalizing that once we were busy working out the numbers. The honorable members will recall that in the presentation I did the previous year, I had indicated that people had said we must cut services and we must just ensure that they get paid. And it arose within this context in the overall chain. But we are addressing this issue, this situation. It has given us a serious strain on our what was already very limited budget, but we just have to live with it. We also processed through the HR services 4,759 new recruits in terms of as permanent appointments, contract appointments, and promotions. With regards to the processing of these appointments, there was a reduction from 4,626, which we did in 2011 and 12 financial years. But nonetheless, we are seeing a lot of people coming into our organization. But I must indicate that, Chair, even as people join us, in some specific levels of the organization, the turnaround is very high. And the reason why the turnaround is very high is that people are looking for whatever they can get given the tight economy, which is additional to their salaries. And our salaries are not increasing at the rate at which the market offers out there. And we are experiencing that. But we are not the only department experiencing that. Other departments are experiencing it as well. In spite of the fact that generally the public service is relatively well paid, but there are certain levels in the organization that we are experiencing high salaries. No, they are leaving. Yes, for better opportunities. Even if those opportunities amount to 500 to 1,000 rand more, but they are moving because the economies are tight. In terms of our vacancy rate, we've maintained a vacancy rate that is below 10%, and we are happy about that. But we did indicate to this Honourable House that we are going to continue doing that because our budget is really, really tight. And so we've been playing around with our organizational establishment and the types of numbers we need to have to be able to deliver the services. We are really, really struggling in this area, Chair. But it's something that obviously we understand, and we've been looking at innovations to do the work a lot better, differently, without using too many members of staff as it were. Hence, we're relying on IT, the equipment on IT as well, just to help us with that area. Within the governance, the administration and governance of the department, we've achieved quite significantly in our view, Chair. Our cash flow management spend, you realize that we are at 99, at least we concluded the year at 99.99% of what was allocated. We were able to return a million rand, and it's not because we are proud of that, Chair. In the how the systems work, both personal and bus, is that when you've done adjustments towards the end of the financial year, if you pay everything to the T, you will go into the red, and we then allow and we make a million rand as an allowance. And before the Honourable Committee ask us why the NPA got away with paying only 12 cents, that's because their drama around them unlikely to finish the year with the budget they had happened a lot earlier in the year. So ours happened towards the end of the year, but that's basically how to explain that. As we've indicated, we finalized four sets of financial statements, 2010, 2011, 2012, as well as 2013. In terms of the current law, we want to align with the CFMA, but we are not yet aligned, so we can table whenever we are ready. And we have said, I had said earlier, we are now preparing the narrative of the annual financial statements, and we will then table as soon as possible. So we are not late, let the members think we are. A total of 96 members of the senior management staff, we were able to finalize their performance agreements within time, which was 11% improvement to the previous year, and the members would have called us the previous year we were sitting at 84.27% in 2011-2012, which was a huge improvement from the previous year when we were even less than, I can't remember the exact number. 100% of all SMS members submitted their financial disclosures on time against the 97.5% which we were able to achieve in the previous financial year. And Chair, by the way, that for us is a big, big issue, because when we talk about the integrity of the department and when we talk about the improved governance of the department, it's all of those small things put together that show us whether our department is growing in terms of improving governance and is growing in terms of improving the integrity of employees. It doesn't mean that if I submit my declaration of interest by design, I'm already a person with integrity, but it's a small step towards being towards showing that. We had successes in a number of service delivery areas, but we also had a number of challenges as well. This Honourable Committee will recall that as we were sitting and doing a presentation in one of the, I think we were presenting our strategy document and the APP, one of our courts was already on fire as we were sitting in Parliament. So we had a number of fires. The Polokwane Magistrate Court, which was totally burnt down, completely burnt down. But even that, we salvaged a lot of documents, we salvaged a lot of recordings. We were able to run within days as a court. Of course, the infrastructure took a while to come together, and it's not together as yet, but it's not due to lack of trying. It's the relevant department that must come to the party in terms of finalizing this. But we must thank the judiciary, we must thank the institution, we must thank the legal aid, because they practically worked in partnership. I went there, the situation was not very good. They are working in kitchens, they are working in libraries. And yes, Chair, they really have had to put up with a lot, but the work continues to be done. Of course, not at the same rate that it would, but it continues to be done, and we are very, very grateful to that. In Ghanaian Magistrate Court as well, we had a fire in Bisho, but these fires did not affect service that materially. Maybe it's Polokwane that we had suffered somewhat substantially, but even there, as I have indicated, the services were brought back on track within the reasonable days. I must indicate, though, Chair, that having said that, when you look at Polokwane, the impact is going to be a lot longer, because we are going to have to go for a rebuild, a complete rebuild. We are going to then have to, the endurance of pain is going to be for much longer than the other two courts that I've mentioned, especially if we take into account where we are with the Pretoria Magistrates Court. We haven't started any building. We've planned, we've budgeted, but we have not started any building because of the procurement process that we've not taken.
Just the fire outbreaks or arson.
Yes. Yes, we have to ask them. It seems odd.
do not categorically point to others. What we think may be something else, but they do not categorically point to others. And in some areas, it's just due to old infrastructure and what I might wish to indicate, and we've been indicating this consistently over the past meetings, is that given the fact that our infrastructure is carrying a much bigger volume of people that use it than what it was designed to carry. We've then added a lot of electrification in systems in an infrastructure that was never designed to carry that. Those things will go wrong, especially if the infrastructure is very old. But not all the fires can be attributed to that only. So there would be other areas, other reasons that are attributed to the fires themselves. But arson was not the strongest, even though our hearts made things different. Thank you. Salary upgrades I've already indicated, but there is also another looming problem that is associated with that. When you upgrade so many people from one level to the other, we've moved them almost to the levels where their supervisors were. And because their supervisors were there, it means there's nobody to supervise them anymore. Right now, we are working on goodwill with them, leaving, begging, and all of that, but we already know they've indicated very somewhat strongly that they want to be upgraded as well, because if they continue supervising these ones, it means they must be paid at a different level. So it amounts to practically moving level 5 and 6 to level 7. We just cannot afford it. We just can't do it. Not right now. We want to, but we just cannot afford it. Our numbers just don't look like they can stomach another upgrade. But having said that, we are engaging with DPSA, we are engaging with National Treasury. We've had a number of meetings with National Treasury outside the budget process. But it's something that does not just affect the Department of Justice, it affects the police in our cluster, it affects the police, it affects correctional services much more substantively than it affects us, but it does affect us quite significantly as well. Members will know that the issues of OASD, both at an operational side as well as the people side, remains a big issue, and we are working on it, we are plowing through it, but it remains unresolved in totality. Some elements we are working through nicely, but some elements are quite difficult to work through. But I can give comfort to this house that it's something that is within our line of sight as management. Of course, budget cuts that we experienced during the year under review did present a huge problem, but I must indicate that we were grateful that National Treasury towards the end of the year gave us some reprieve, not in terms of funding, but allowed us to be able to pay accruals when towards the end of the year, with the savings in other areas where we couldn't spend money because DPW processes had not moved. So we were able to pay some accruals to the tune of about 200 million rand. So it meant, so when you see the budget cuts, and I have been making this link over the past 3 years, when you see a budget cut of about 600 million, you must also understand that it has an impact in your accruals, it has an impact in other things. In particular, our accruals, our payments within 30 days have been affected somewhat significantly by that. But the relief that Treasury gave us then bought us a bit of breathing space. We are still having accruals and we are still there. And that's the point I just wanted to reach. They've reduced, but they are still there. Despite the challenges that we have indicated, and I must really thank the management team and the overall staff of the department in ensuring that, in spite of those challenges, the business of the department continued to turn. We were able to provide the services advice. We continue to support the judiciary. It continued to conclude the cases. We're able to support the prosecution. We're able to build infrastructure, as members are aware, and as we will show later in the presentation. We were able to ensure that the civil courts run, the criminal courts run, the labor courts run, and all other courts run. You will see when we get to the actual performance, you will see that the way we performed under 49% is in the family advocate environment, and we will explain that in detail. But overall, even with that, the legal system continued to turn. We were able to enroll 900,000 worth of cases through our legal system, and they were supported through the normal support that we provided to the Department of Justice. Over 174,000 new maintenance applications were received, and over 246,000 new domestic violence orders and applications were handled. In addition, over 1,500 adoptions were finalized. The Office of the Chief Family Advocate handled over 50,000 cases of these matters involving children during 2012 and 2013. But as you will see later, we are saying we've brought in a lot of interventions to help the Office of the Family Advocate in the same way as we are focusing on the case in this area. Over 240,000 matters were handled by the Master of the High Court throughout the country, and these included deceased estate, insolvencies, curatorship, trust, and guardian fund payments. Over 5,500 litigation cases against states were enrolled and handled through the state attorneys. Furthermore, over 10,000 cases of expungements and pardons were finalized. Over 1,600 matters involving legal opinions, scrutinizing and certification of bills, subordinate legislation and or regulations, and international agreements and translations were handled by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor during the year. The Marikana, as well as the Strategic Defense Procurement Package Commission, continued to be supported and funded during the year under review. Now we move to court performance. The following slides will obviously give you an indication, as the Honorable House, of how the Superior Court performed, how the Regional and District Court performed, as well as the matters relating to vulnerable groups. Criminal cases from lower courts are not presented in this report, as they were dealt with somewhat substantially by the National Prosecuting Authority, so we did not rehash that. It should also be noted that the Office of the Chief Justice is responsible for case flow management, and we are tasked in providing support to those processes. But going forward, and if the vote story is settled this year, the case flow management will move completely out of us. And what we've done this year is we have moved the budget for case flow management to be managed by the Secretary General as a start of that. This is how the Superior Court performed over the period. In terms of 2012-2013 financial year, there were 123 applications that were launched with it, compared to the 153 cases that have been applications that have been launched. So there has been a 24% increase in the work volume. Cases that are awaiting direction in 2011-2012 financial year, there were three. They are this year 13, so you have an increase of 15%. 5%, I don't know where I got the one from. Cases that were dismissed, more cases were dismissed this year than they were last year. This showed an increase of 2%. 60% of judgments were concluded this year compared to the 35 that were concluded the previous year. Fixations, Chair, this is an area that we were not monitoring both in judgments and fixations just across the board in the organization. And we are starting to monitor that, especially in unopposed matters, just to see how we can do this going forward. So hopefully our future reports will show an improvement on that. again, the statistics are there and they speak for themselves. New cases in the Supreme Court of Appeal 26, 65 from 26, there was no growth in the cases withdrawn. Letters that were upheld reduced a bit this year. Appeals that were refused reduced a bit this year. Letters that were referred back, only four were referred back, as well as letters that were finalized. The Supreme Court of Appeal was not able to finalize as many matters as it had finalized the previous year. Civil appeals, it's the same story. There's a reduction of performance consistently, as members can see. Now, during the year under review, the criminal petition matters increased by 10%, as I have already indicated, and that's just basically that narrative that is shown in the slide, and as honorable members can see. But you will see that there were a lot more matters that were withdrawn, which constitute 180% of that, but appeals that were granted, you will see that the picture doesn't look good, the question is why, and so on. The Labour Court, we must apologize, there was an error in the Labour Court. It will be the second area that we will be showing error. In the annual report, we speak to a different set of numbers. Those are now the numbers that are corrected. Those are corrected numbers. Please forgive us for that error. We read that annual report so many times, and we don't know between the final report and change where the error happened, but it did happen, and I apologize. Land claims court is an area that must be looked at, and we hope the Office of the Chief Justice will do that. There's something not right there.
I was never going to just go past the two.
I don't think it's something that we can say. We just look at it in the normal course of work, because the operation of that court is at the center of the survival or otherwise of the country. But some of the weaknesses that we may find exist in that court may be as a result of the operations of the Land Claims Commission. I think the two must be looked at together. I think it is the Land Claims Commission that impacts on the court, because some of those Land Claims Commission, I can tell you that in 1998, I was one of the lawyers that instituted the claims on behalf of clients. This year, when I interacted with those people, nothing has been done. Those cases are still at the stage of investigation. And how can we investigate for 15 years?
Mm-hmm.
So there's something seriously wrong, and I think our democracy is in danger because of the operations of those offices.
Thank you, Chair. I think we would agree with that assessment, and it's an area that we just thought is important to put on the table. The High Court Chair contested the other two levels, have worked somewhat slightly better, with an improvement on matters and roles, also improved major improvement on matters finalized. Default judgments reduced significantly, but also the ones that were granted reduced significantly. But you will also see that just compared to the year, in terms of issues of taxation, the taxation increased quite significantly, and the matters that were dealt with and finalized within the taxation. kind of keep for the side if I don't have to explain and check the take a peek what it looks like. In civil cases, Chair, in divorce matters, 38% was the increase in terms of enrollment. The matters that got to the role were increased by 73%. The divorces that were granted were 80%. The matters that were struck off the role were 26%. The matters that were received were 26%, which is the exact same number. And matters that were withdrawn have reduced significantly. And we are happy with that because we do not want matters to be withdrawn from court. Similarly, in terms of the regional court receiving matters,
the applications increased by 105%. 2% of other applications were also brought there and dealt with. The court was unable to conclude its work in good time, so they were down by 34%. They were also down in granting the applications that were brought before it, and there were major withdrawals of applications, so there is something there which we have not done an analysis of as to why in civil matters we withdraw so many cases, but it's something that we need to look at going forward. In district courts, you will see that the compared to the previous year, there has been somewhat underperformance, and the numbers just speak for themselves as well. But it's not due to lack of support. It's what happened in court, and I'm sure the NPA would have covered some of the concerns that we had raised in this honourable court previously. In terms of the number of hours that get spent in adjudicating matters in court, as one of the areas that is a concern, and we did raise this area, and we are hoping that through the improvement of the governance of the Office of the Chief Justice, this area is going to be addressed.
Absolutely. Is that not related to what the MPA said, that lawyers keep on postponing and dragging the cases? And if so, is that really what we mean by the independence of the legal profession, that they should delay the delivery of justice?
Well, if I could just add to that, you see, Dr. Manchikhan, the point I tried to make is that it's also in the hands of the presiding officer in a particular court. He or she permits postponements, then it really lies in the independence of the judiciary and the bench. And which is what the NPA were trying to explain. Say, look, be mindful of this. However, there are other factors affecting it. Although the new head of the NPA tried to present a reasonable argument, because he comes from now the other side, you see. I'm trying to say there are several factors which the presiding judge or magistrate must consider: the interests of the state, the interests of the defense, the interests of justice, and on that basis, then they decide to postpone. Well, you can decide for yourself whether it's a reasonable argument or not. It's the sort.
On slide 32,
yes,
that issue there that's just been raised by the DEG about the decrease of 43% in civil crime has got nothing to do with the independence of the legal profession. If you look here, and Dr. Mashaker's point was correctly raised yesterday, and might well be, but it is in the hands of the presiding officer. But here you've got a serious problem with your with the people that are enrolled in your civil trials. 150,000 trials are enrolled in the 1 year. The next year, only 85,000. Now, we need to engage what are the reasons for that. Because you've still got that backlog of cases, but a million cases, and yes, there's a slight, there's a reduction of the summonses issued, but to that degree, there's, we would need to find out why are the number of civil cases enrolled so drastically reduced. Is it because there are substantially less summons increased issued, or is there a problem with the allocation of court dates? And that is a wider term thing we need to look at. For example, what, as Dr. Macheko knows, a practicing advocate, what are the waiting times for trial dates in high court, and if that is a, then it's not the fault of the legal practitioners.
Sure.
Then it is a fault in the system that you can't get dates for trials.
And why can't you get dates?
That is what we need to engage on. New trials enrolled, and maybe just think about that, DG, as to what are the reasons for that? Do we have any idea why there are so fewer cases enrolled? That is a massive reduction. And it has an impact on our whole economy if cases are not speeded, particularly for civil matters which relate to money and claims. So that is something we need to engage upon.
We shouldn't rush to exonerate the legal profession.
You get bullshit.
So we just had, since you, Chairman, brought up the fact that presiding officers are in charge of the place of litigation. Let's just remember that under the leadership of the Chief Justice, case flow management is now a practice in South Africa. It is at the various pilot project stages. And one of the questions I would like to ask later, since the DG has touched upon it, is to expand for us on something the NPA said yesterday. Case flow management in some cases is working, in others not. And whether you have been able to identify the factors. But shall we just remember that A, it's correct that much of this is in the hands of planning officers. B, something is already being done about it, but by the Chief Justice, that should be.
Although, in fairness to the Chief, it will take him a while to get to that. Because all this is happening in the lower place.
Thank you very much. Smart Claim Court, you can see for yourself the work has grown quite considerably in the Small Claims Court. In part, that's because the numbers of the Small Claims Court have increased, but also the awareness on issues of access to the Small Claims Court has also increased. So the work that is good that is going on there, and we believe that if we can sustain that, then more resolutions of those areas within that jurisdiction, we should have less and less of problems. Equality Court, in the recent past, we did a bit of a, not an analysis, but we just made inquiries as to why were people not accessing Equality Court. I think it was in end of 2010, 2011, but it wasn't a study necessarily. We just went and asked people, but it wasn't a formal survey. And we established that not that people were aware of the Equality Court and what they could approach the Equality Court for. And we realized that with an additional communication and education around issues of Equality Court, people are beginning to access it a lot more.
Oh my God, a lot more than 2011.
Well,
a lot more than 2011.
Yes, absolutely. Compared to 2010, it's a huge improvement. Excuse me. Domestic violence, different story altogether. There's a lot of increase, which we should not be seeing. The ideal thing on domestic violence, we should be seeing a lot less. We want to be seeing a lot less because we want a lot less violent society, especially in family environments. But the unfortunate is happening.
we had an 18% increase in new applications for domestic violence. We had 151,000 protection orders, which is an increase of 34%. 6% of those were made final. 2% of those were set aside. Excuse me. Very few were varied. So basically, there is a problem in varying the domestic violence orders. We need to find out what the problem is. We haven't done the analysis that must indicate. The interim relief that was sought was not able to be provided. You can see that there is a negative number there, and there is also equally a negative number in the granting. So there is a bit of an analysis that needs to be done there, and we want to start doing that analysis in the new financial year.
You know, I remember that in the 80s, what came to be unpopularly known as people's courts, which were actually community courts. The people themselves within communities were able to eradicate these kinds of problems. Now the question is whether do we really need to rely solely on the state to deal with domestic violence or to find mechanisms for the community themselves to deal with this matter. I see there was a presentation about alternative dispute resolution mechanisms, whether there are no community structures that can serve that purpose, which in my view would be more effective than protection orders. I don't know, but I'm just saying maybe we should look at that, because I'm not sure that the state itself, with all this drunkenness everywhere, unemployment, we want to do this.
One of the reasons of the alternative dispute resolution mechanism was to look at areas where we could finalize cases, but in some areas prevent matters from being, not prevent, but minimize some of the matters that need not go to a full-blown court system. And we continue to explore opportunities, which areas could these be. And I must indicate we have not explored that in this area of work. That's because this is somewhat a somewhat sensitive area where those negotiations can go well and the families can be together. But if they go wrong, they can go hopelessly wrong, and the consequences may also be dire. So it's one thing that we need to think very carefully about before we explore it and make rules on it, as it were. So it's one of the areas that perhaps as a team will go back and think about. Thank you.
I mean, the minute you're the state, the minute the department starts thinking about and making rules about it, it is the state doing it. So, which defeats the purpose of document disclosure. I think it's a dangerous line of thought. Surely our churches, as in the old days, the other organs of society, churches and the like, should be doing it. But that director general Sindane should come nowhere near it. The minute she does, the minute the department does, the minute we approve regulations, it's the state. Same deal. And you don't want to move outside the court system. You precisely don't. Because then you just it's okay, so
vigilantism.
Yes, it's vigilantism.
Maybe, Chair, if you could consider, you know, having some dialogues on community justice and let the people say how do they understand this problem and according to them what they think must be done so that it's not an imposition.
We hear what you're saying, Doctor, and I think in principle there may even be a claim of it, but the concern raised by Mrs. Watson is valid. The minute Sindane stands up, then it's the state and government. And whereas this initiative should come I don't understand
why.
And why
do we have to ask you?
No,
none of our business.
No, it's none of our business.
But
as an ordinary citizen, it is our business.
In the old days, they would include.
Yes.
They receive it.
Yes, and they would sit down with people in the church, and then something would happen.
Mm.
I don't know what, because I was never there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We were doing this within the context of just the operational work of the intersectoral committee. We probably would do that when we want to go big. We just wanted to find out the answers in the short term. But I appreciate the point that is being raised, and it's something that we will explore, and I will explore with the team going forward. But by the way, Chair, if I may, the NPA does have the research component, albeit very limited, which also assists it to research on how it is doing and propose innovation in certain areas. And so we are using those people rather than using the people who are going to court and doing court work. Thank you very much. There's a problem with releasing children to parental care, as you can see there. And one of the anecdotal information that is coming from the research that I've already indicated shows that most parents do not want these children back. And it's anecdotal, like I've indicated, anecdotal. They don't want the children back. They are afraid of those children. They are afraid. It's drug related. They themselves, the parents, have been victims of these children. And that is the biggest problem that we are experiencing. And indeed, it is associated with the new generation drugs, your Neope and other illicit drugs. And the unfortunate thing is that children are taking Neope at a much younger age, probably around 8, 9, they are already on those drugs, which also is a problem. But again, it's anecdotal information, and some of the children in the case, you can tell that the children is not older than 10 years. But strictly speaking, they are just refusing. The parents are just refusing to take the children. But even if they do take them, the children still run away. Even if so that's the problem that we have been experiencing. But there are a lot more children that are being released on days. Of course, they have not committed serious offences, and they have parents that can accept them, or an adult that can accept them, who can then provide care for their child. Children in secure care facilities increase.
I want you to say that, you know,
universities like South University of South Africa still teach strict law. Now the question is, how does that strict law relate to these kinds of problems, or that those kind of problems couldn't be adapted to deal with practical issues like this? Because if you are going to have parents being afraid of receiving their children, I don't think that the police and the state can deal with that. We really need some other kinds of intervention.
Chair, I must say that the level of tracker issues is so high in South Africa. And I wonder whether we all comprehend the level of problem that is facing us. What I know is that in some provinces actually became the war on drugs. But it will be good to have like a national program, so that when you come in like this also, you address it directly. Because it's a huge problem, just in Gauteng, only the house where 33 million was found from the process of that. They just didn't find drugs, they found 33 million and that's of that. It tells you of the level of business that's taking place, like that business that is the type of business that affects our children. That's why the parents don't want those children. Parents complain about a child stealing even when you're cooking, a pot from the stove with meat inside, when you sell it. You're cooking for him, but he's stealing the same meat and your pot, when you sell it in order for them to buy that. That's how serious it is. And we just need to declare war on it as a country.
Chair, it's really worrying. I remember when I taught my students of criminology about this problem, if parents no longer want the children back, then we're going to have in South Africa what we call a criminogenic society. I don't know how we're going to have this sort of said he said something to me.
In terms of now we come to the economy or
in the 20th century year and therefore we had a problem. We were for something like that, you have to prepare for years before the time comes and test it before the Secretary General starts doing that. So we focused a lot last year, when the previous financial year, on ensuring that we have better KPIs, but even then we had serious difficulties in terms of the evidence that we needed to provide to the Auditor General. So we're able to only achieve 28%. But also during this time our biggest focus was on turning around our financial situation. Even though performance information was a big thing, but we also focused more on financial information, and I think we just did not balance the ratio of the right. But in 2013, we improved quite considerably. We still underperformed in terms of the targets fully achieved. But we have improved, and our system has improved, and we are hoping that, and in fact, the current year shows that in most indicators we are already achieving this. I must indicate that those indicators that we have not achieved, only a very few, I think only 10% were we not able to perform, and we performed under 49%. But as for the rest of the indicators, there was significant performance, but we did not meet the target. I just wanted to give some back to the committee that it's not as if we went to town and when we were supposed to be at work. We worked very hard, but we just were not able to achieve the target for one reason or the other. But we are paying particular attention to that. Our systems are beginning to make sense to us in terms of capturing the right information. The culture in the organization is beginning to come together. To understand that when information is due on a particular date, it must only be produced. We're still struggling here and there in the organization. I can't tell you if everything is right, but we are comfortable. So that table shows indicators that we performed as planned, and 100% is 25, we were able to achieve 100% of the 25 indicators. Of the 14 indicators, we ranged between 80% and 99%. And of the 13 indicators, we performed between 50% and 79%. And 5 indicators, we underperformed. And this is the point I was trying to illustrate earlier, that in the area of family advocates, this is where we underperformed in 2 services of the family advocates. And there's a reason for that. During 2010-2011 financial year,
can you put those two together? Okay. Tell us, what is
the red stands for underperformance. It's between 0% and 39%. If your performance stood within 0% and 39%, then it means you are at 5. 6, it means you are red. That other color that I don't know, that looks brownish kind of. It means you improved your performance, but you are still under 100%, and 80% to 99%. So those colors just reflect that. And nothing else.
It's kind of
nice. Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
Financial year.
under consideration. So there isn't much more that we need to do except that they are going through the government's processes, internal affairs, and the presidency. And then the additional one-stop child justice centers, we already have them, as the members would know. However, we had planned that we were going to have two during that year. And when micro planning was finalized, and the other one, I can't remember, could not be finalized, we were then requested by this honorable house to perhaps, before running and doing the finalization of all of them, just go and have and research the point, the numbers, the groupings that is required, the support, and cost them correctly before we can go to this honorable house. And we felt that was a better option than just to put the child justice centers without having done sufficient research on them. Having said that, then we didn't meet the target. So all of these targets where we are under 50%, these are the ones that are raised in the previous slide. I just thought I'll share with you. I'd like to spend a bit of time on the two on family advocates because I don't want this honorable committee to think that we say we are prioritizing children and then we are performing this way. These are but just two of the indicators in the totality of the pool of indicators where we are prioritizing issues of children. During this period, it wasn't this period, but it's an impact of this period, to this period. In 2010, there was the expansion of three jurisdictions. And that meant that the family advocate services used to be in particular centers, and now they have to be spread countrywide. And when we did this, I think we kind of did not recognize that service specifically. We looked at other services, but we didn't look at that service more categorically to say what would the overall impact be once divorces are done in regional courts and all of that. And now it means the number of family advocates that we have spend a lot of time traveling in between to different court jurisdictions instead of being sitting and doing the work. So that is the one aspect. So there is just a function of numbers. We need to increase the number of family advocates, the number of social workers, and the number of all those wonderful people who are in the area of work. So this year, because we had been looking at this trend last year to see whether it was going to improve, and we realized that it wasn't. So we allocated some additional resources for capacity to be procured for people to come and work in these areas. That was the one thing that we did. The second, we said we don't want people's salaries to be increased necessarily so that we give you money only to increase salaries, but we don't buy new people. We want new people on the ground. So that's the one thing that we did. The second that we did, we said we had adjusted the targets because we realized we could never meet the targets at the rate at which we are going and the number of issues we are facing. And given that, we adjusted the targets downwards, and we've been tracking whether with the limited targets, with the reduced targets that we've given them, are they able to perform? Is it just a question of inefficiency in the system or not? But there is no inefficiency in the system right now. It's just that we need to manage that aspect of target. So they have started now building capacity, but we think they will use this year to build capacity, and we're not going to adjust their target upwards next year. We are going to ask them to perform more, but we're not going to adjust their target until such time that they have the right levels of capacity.
Methods that have been utilized that you can actually review. Because for now,
somewhere it's presenting to, somewhere it's numbers, and somewhere it's 50, you don't know it's 50% of what, you know. I think it's something that you need to look at, yeah.
I think we appreciate the community. Then when it comes to programmatic performance, now we're going through the details of how we perform against the predetermined objectives. Perhaps before I do that, Chair, I think it's an opportunity for me to explain that the auditor generally audited us only on the predetermined objectives. In other words, only on this area. The area that we've just presented is additional information on work that we did, but we didn't have in specific terms, predetermined objectives. Because for your business, you can't put everything in your strategy, but you still do the work. So we were showing you the things that we did, but that were not necessarily targeted as we go. But now we are coming back and we are telling you specifically what did we target, how did we perform against that. Okay. Perhaps if I start with the work that we did in terms of attaining an unqualified audit of peers. Members would recall that we started off in 2010 by handling the PPP, which was going to manage the third party funds for us. We handled that contract and we built our own internal capacity to be able to do that. And we have done that. We put a number of improvements in terms of systems and controls in to enable us to protect credible financial statements for and financial reports for the citizens. And then work was done and continues to be improved as and when gaps are being identified. We had continuous revisions and updates of departmental financial procedures and then we found that the areas that were still loose and that were exposing us to risk as an organization. We built a lot of capacity in terms of people, in terms of supply chain management, in terms of asset disposal and asset acquisition and asset registers. We build capacity around receipts and revenue management, and I think that area of our business has assisted us a lot in terms of how we improve our expenditure management. And our expenditure for the year shows that we build capacity there as well as the reporting in the department in terms of the annual financial statements. Our capacity is not optimal yet, and it is not at the rate which we would want it to be, especially in the Department of Finance, but I think the commencement of the chief of the chief financial officer now in October kind of completes that block that we expect. We are going to build capacity in senior management in finance and capacity in strategic areas of finance. And that concludes that, and we are very comforted by that. We also established an internal control unit within the CFO's office to monitor compliance with prescriptions. And each one of these, they are clear deliverables that they had to deliver. For instance, the last one, if I use that as an example, how we managed to turn the corner around irregular expenditure that the Auditor General has been speaking about, how we turned the corner around payments within 30 days, is a function just of a combination of all these units, but in particular dedicated to the last unit. And I'd like just to show the committee. Just to give you a sense of what this means for us. And this is, all those improvements respond to the Auditor General's findings that they have been giving
case over a period of time. So if one of the findings was that we were not paying within 30 days, and indeed that finding was correct, and we still are not paying fully within 30 days in all cases, I'm not going to show you the whole presentation, but I wanted just to focus on this slide. You can see that since we've been visiting this capacity for over a period, while we were able to manage all our invoices countrywide, and when I say countrywide, other departments have an office per province. We have many courts, and we procure at source, and you can tell that there's a lot of money we pay on a monthly basis, and the numbers are there, and they speak for themselves. What this means is that in terms of cash flow management, you are able to then see your cash, how are you doing. You can see that even though the graphs are a bit erratic, but they show you where your, how much of invoices, how many invoices are you paying within the 30-day period, and how many invoices are not paying within the 30-day period. So just that analysis has been very important for us to know why are we not paying within 30 days and what can be done. And the focus and the people running around and phoning and saying pay and all of that. So we are clearing there. That's the one element. There's another element that I really wanted to show you. So just this pie chart illustrates this thing even better. Because you can see that the payments within 30 days is reflected in green. So you can see that compared to where we were in 2011 and where we were in 2010 to where we are now, we've brought this thing down to a manageable problem rather than where we were before. But having said that, I'd like the Honourable House to know that our budget will not allow us to pay everybody this year. And that is what puts us to an accrual position pretty much each year. In 2010, we started with 680 million budget tax. In 2011, we were at 450, and of course, each year we start with the budget cut. And as we start with the budget cut, we would have already committed some services which we would have to pay the following year. And that is why we always have accruals. Accruals have come in the main from security, and they have come in the main from public works, and CETA. But what I'd like to give you comfort, the Honourable House, that we try and not pay small suppliers unless there's a problem with their invoices. We are very strict with problems with invoices, we just don't take. We help them fix the problem though. We don't say there's a problem and leave them alone. We work with them to try and fix whatever problems could be with the invoice, and then we will only pay when we must pay. But we don't take. Because if we pay, then it moves to irregular expenditure. So you can't fix the problem here and create it elsewhere. And that's the point that I wanted to. So small suppliers indeed are paid, and we prioritize them. So if we don't have money, we try and not pay bigger suppliers like your public works and your teachers and your security service provider. We think this year we are going to see a lot more improvement on the security accrual. And the reason why I think that is because we just concluded a contract that took us to court. I'm sure members were reading that. That took us to court a few times in the past month or two. And how we structured that contract is very different. A lot of people are very unhappy with the security for court. Most people are very unhappy, both the suppliers and the people who are being secured and our own people and our own staff. Everybody is unhappy, but we structured the contract that way because it was just how it needed to be structured because there's just no more money. The contract would have cost us 1.2 billion, 1.2 to 3 billion, and we ended up contracting for 750 million. So we cut a lot from that contract because we just didn't have the money. Thank you. So we've dealt with this, we've dealt with that. So that, sorry. Yeah, now we are showing you other aspects of the work that we did in addressing the audit findings and continue to do. We created a very small capacity of only two human beings in the department who are doing other work as well, but they've been very kind to allow us to use them to do this. They are driving the audit, actually telling the department, and they visit all of us and tell us that we are not performing, and that's just what they do. During the under review, we didn't meet all our targets in terms of audit action plan, but it helped us fundamentally to get us to a point of readiness when the auditor general did come to audit us. In terms of managing fraud and corruption, we pay particular attention to managing fraud and corruption. We aren't doing too well in this area yet, but it's an area that, amongst others, the conference I referred to earlier that we held yesterday seeks to address this area of work. But in addition, the controls that I've already spoken about seek to address this area of work. But having said that, we were able to, in terms of new cases, we received about 60% of those cases, and of the old cases we had in the system, 70% of old cases. We finalized 77% of the cases, of the new cases. And remember, we were carrying a backlog of 70%. We finalized all of those in the current financial year, in the previous financial year, the year reporting year. The outcomes of those, we had 26 dismissals, we had final written warnings of 17, we had salary suspensions for two employees, and we had 2 months suspension without salary for four employees. We had a lot of arrests as well, and in fact, in the department, incidentally, we have arrested sometimes week, and sometimes every other month, and sometimes two, or sometimes three. That's just the focus that we've had in the past few years that is beginning. Because the controls are getting tighter, we are able to get people arrested and at least spend a day in jail, if not longer than a day. But also the sentences have been somewhat cumbersome. We haven't given you a whole portfolio of sentences, but they do range from a year to four years now that the officials have been convicted for. And obviously, in addition to that, we do then get rid of them from the department in addition to that. What at cluster level, what we want to do with this information is to then consolidate it, and everybody that has been arrested to then be put in one database so that the whole cluster can see the progress from other departments, and we can also prevent this speculation of people who have been found guilty in other departments but finding themselves working for other departments without knowing it. Obviously, we did a lot of, and we continue to do a lot of staff workshops, and I'm going to just go to the table and indicate that we are targeted 35, we're able to do 36, and those workshops happen at every level, starting with our ex-co and then going all the way down the organization. The issue of vetting remains a problem in terms of just speeding up the numbers of vetting. In part because those forms are very, very complicated. Anyone who's gone through the vetting process will know it's such an issue. Finding all your long-lost friends to vouch for you, and they change their addresses, and every time they move, because when you apply, people do move. By the time they go to them, they've already moved, and you have to. But you still have to pick up the phone and phone them and say, where do you live now? And they must then go and visit them there. Because indeed they go and visit. They visit everybody in my family, every friend that I ever had. And that's the challenge. But what we did is we prioritized SMS members and those members that are working in strategic areas, whether it's information security or in supply chain management. and we try and put additional measures in place, like we make people sign secrecy agreements and all that. Not because for instance, for people who work with cabinet information, we can't let them tell the world what is going on in cabinet. Stuff like that.
They must try to secrecy.
No, not all stuff. No, when we are saying, remember that others already have vetting, already are vetted, but what we are saying is at any given point in time, you will either be required, depending on your requirements, your work requirements, you will either be required to sign your secrecy, for instance, if you, as I indicated, if you're working for cabinet, but disclosure forms are common across the board, and of course, continuous evaluations and controls. That's the point.
No, firstly, I think it needs to be corrected, TG. When you say all staff, then it creates, so that has to be corrected. Secondly, I take the point you make, but I think Rodney de Kock did explain that actually those documents were public, because they had been made available to the defense lawyers of those two gentlemen, I think, who have already been convicted. Those are the documents that BBC have used. And they've been somewhat dishonest by saying to the rest of the world, these are secret documents, and we've managed to sneak them out, when in fact it's not the case. So they've misled their viewers, Panorama.
So, but they say certain categories to secrecy being portrayed as.
We ask parliamentary questions to establish your communion, but your establishment are actually sworn to secrecy and in respect of rights and so forth.
Senior management and news philosophy.
Management, and as DG said, senior management and those officials who occupy a strategic position.
Maybe we can just get a short report, please.
Yeah,
we can
collect. One thing that I must leave you with absolute comfort, we don't do things. I don't do stuff. That's all we can give. That's the comfort. Available on the airwaves visit schools, visit communities. We did a lot of community participation, always in this way as well. But just on the media side, we had targeted that we're going to have 40 campaigns that we run, and we're aiming to achieve 53. But we don't think that we will be able to repeat that because we've cut our budget for communications this year. But having said that, our communications have improved quite significantly in the past financial year. Presidential hotline, every time we come here, we tell the Honourable House that we are performing very well in the presidential hotline. We are among the top performers in government, and we are following up cases. We conclude them, and when we mean a case has been concluded, we mean we've gone back to the complainant and we have said, we are now closing our file, are you happy? And they say they are, or even if they're not happy with the outcome, but the case is closed because we've done everything that needed to have been done. And then we haven't had comebacks from the residential hotline cases, and we are tracking them. Where we have not done reasonably well in the residential hotline cases is in areas where we still have lost documents for appeals in some areas, as I reported in this Honourable House before, that we introduced a number of mechanisms to address lost documents. So those will be the few cases that we are not able to finalize within 30 days, but overall we are finalizing all cases within 30 days. The vacancy rate I'd already spoken to, and we met our target, but we are particularly happy that we've been operating for the past 3 years with an ex-co of about a few people, and now we have three more people, so we are very happy about that. Grievances is an area we have not really done well in. And that's just because of the numbers and volumes of grievances that are generally occasioned by certain events in particular. They normally happen around issues of performance, and they normally happen around issues of job upgrades that those processes, but eventually they get resolved. So we wanted to finalize 60%, we were able to finalize 557%. Which amounts to 516 grievances. So we are keeping that one. In fact, as late as last ECO, it was Monday this week, we concluded that we are going to establish specific task teams to just find out why are we not finalizing these grievances on time, and hopefully when we report again, our performance will have improved considerably. Misconduct cases is also another area that we've moved in leaps and bounds, even though we were not able to achieve our target. It's an area that has been a drag in our overall performance as a department, but we think we are going to turn that corner. We have all indicators showing that we are making good progress, even just judging from the performance there, but also judging from the performance in the past 2 quarters that we've just concluded. In terms of overall capacity in the department around issues of training, you will see that we did not meet our target, and there were a number of reasons which I will speak to, but I'd like to focus just on the areas in which we train in anti-corruption, fraud, and dishonesty, those types of areas, maintenance, sexual offences, domestic violence, child law training, service excellence, foundation management, which talks to the managerial supervisory type skills to manage others, quasi-judicial services, which talk to your taxation, your default judgments and the like, prosecutorial training executives, and we did other training which we would otherwise have made the numbers and surpassed them, but they were, that training was not part of what was originally planned. So against the planned target of 6,500, we were able to do 4,940. But overall training in the department, and I want to explain this so that you see the numbers in context, we were able to do 9,962. Why do we have two different numbers relating to training? In the department, when we plan this type of training, we plan it because we've identified the needs. Then in here, you find other areas that are burning that you need to go and zoom in and focus on as a department. But that training must go on. But the same capacity that you are using to train must help you make the interventions that you have discovered. So, and those interventions are either done by branches themselves, not by Justice College. This work is done by Justice College. But the branches themselves, we may decide that the new thing that we must train on, and if we don't, like how to work the MPET, which we still are struggling with. So then we take everybody through the MPET process. That's why you will then have those numbers which show you for completeness. This is the budget we spend for training, but those are the numbers of people we train.
Okay. May we know whether this alternative dispute resolution training is not relevant to the work that we
The alternative dispute resolution training is very relevant, and you will see it in the plan for this current financial year and the coming financial year. That's because it speaks to the transformation of the state legal services. So we have already identified people to be trained in alternative dispute resolution, either for court-connected mediation and or our own, if I say our own, I mean not court-connected, dispute resolution, which mechanism which comes from the JCPS cluster to get people to agree on things that would have divided them in the past. And so the area of work that I had said we will look at, not that we will intervene, but we'll look at and see what the realms of possibilities would have then gone into that area. Yes, but we've just started with alternative dispute resolution mechanism training. I have already spoken to the issues of TRC, but I just wanted to indicate the outstanding numbers. We are now looking at very minimal numbers. We are targeted to conclude 123 in terms of the payments. We were able to pay the next three. There were those, obviously, processes to find the next of kin, which we still struggle with, but we were able to find a few, of course. We were able to find 237 against the target of 252. But we are pretty much not going to be making too much progress in this area going forward. And I must indicate this. And it's not that we don't want to. It's just proving we've invested a lot of money in finding these people. The question is whether they want to be found, and I don't mean this badly. I don't have the right language, but the possibilities of finding them and them coming forward have run absolutely very narrow now. We've advertised, we've published, we've spoken, we've dispatched, for instance, Miss Acting Regional Head, Ramila, we've got them vans to go to the remotest of places in KZN where we had that those people could still be located, and we're not able to find as many as we thought we would. Similarly, in the Eastern Cape, and I'm talking about provinces with the most rural settings, and the chances of finding them are just not very, I'm not very optimistic right now. and we just have to find a way of closing this chapter. Otherwise, it sits here as though there's something much more that we can still do. So this year, the balance of this year, we will look. But I think going forward, in our strategy going forward, we need to find a different articulation of what we are going to do about it. Thank you. I had already spoken to the issues of regulation that I indicated why we are having not concluded there. Now, I'd like to speak very briefly about community rehabilitation, because when we presented last time, we indicated that we had started with a program of work to be able to get the community needs. That work has continued very well, I think, but we have not combined a report of those needs as yet. But Dr. Sevier has gone around the country and identified areas, and all that is now needed is a combination of the needs of communities to be able to then start dispatching if we agree, obviously, on those identified needs. I must indicate, though, that in this area we've had a lot of attacks from various bodies, not least of which is the LRC. Yes, because they think that we are squandering the TRC money. So they've written to the minister, the AG, I don't know who else, including myself, indicating that they're squandering. But we haven't, I can assure
you. Who will get the answer? After George. I mean, when they attack you, what is the basis of the attack? And who are they representing? What constituency?
Well, they didn't say they are representing a particular constituency, but they indicated that it's not in the interest of the beneficiaries who would otherwise have been paid differently had we not done the community rehabilitation. They contend that the doing of community rehabilitation is almost irrelevant because communities have changed and all of that has changed, and maybe we should be using this money a lot more differently. And they say we must wait for our regulations, but we say we can't regulate until we know the needs. So we are in that conversation right now, but we are dealing with that situation. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, it's just problematic because we have public representatives at local level, provincial level, national level, and now an NGO then goes to engage you on this matter, then you must. I'm trying to get answers to them. The department is answerable to NGOs or to parliament. I think, I don't know, maybe I don't grasp the issue, but I just think it's problematic that with so many other NGOs, if all of them can do that to you on different issues, you won't run the country.
The sense I get, DG, and correct me if I'm wrong, what the Legal Resources Center is probably saying is, look, I don't know what this community rehabilitation process entails, but some people spoke about establishing a clinic or in school, and so perhaps what they are saying is, take that money and give it to the individual victims.
But can't we say, even in that case, deals with the community.
Yes.
They are community stakeholders. Now, you can't say one stakeholder, which is not even rooted within those communities,
yes,
then should be taken away.
Yeah. Wonder if we should engage with them. I'll see. Chandler.
They did request a meeting, if my memory serves me correctly. We responded, obviously, to their issue, and we gave annual financial statements, all detailed financial annual financial statements of the TLC and whatever else they had requested. But the meeting has not happened, and it's not because we have not been available, we indicated our availability. But the meeting has not happened. So we haven't quite sat around the table to understand on what basis do they think that they spent the money. We can just say that we haven't spent the money.
Because then actually would help you to even know how to close the process. And maybe closing the process would be good if it's a process that you've actually consulted on. And part of the consultation would be to meet the LRC.
It depends if the LRC is acting of its own accord or in, on the instructions of a client. If they're acting on the instructions of a client, then you've got a different perspective. But I would agree with the view that that discussion takes place first with the department, and then if necessary one takes it further. I'm not sure about the status of the regulations, whether they are coming to Parliament at all. But that's not a big issue. I was just thinking that I don't see regulations being a process of public submissions or anything, so there wouldn't be an opportunity there for them to engage in us. It's not like a bill where you'd have public hearings. But I would think the way forward is to have that discussion, and then if necessary at a later stage one can engage with them. But it depends if they are contemplating litigation. That's the key thing. If they are, then it's unwise for us for you to be careful also to
eat.
Well, it depends, Chair. You know, I was always taught as an attorney, it's better to draw than to war. But depending on the nature of your discussions and without prejudice and all that type of thing. But obviously, you would have your legal advisors present as well. You know.
So I'm a fan of the LRC, and I would almost always be on their side. But I would guess, now I'm just guessing, they may be acting for somebody like Kulumani, whose position I'm familiar with. They're just plain wrong. The decision was taken a very long time ago, and I was part of the whole TRC legislative process. My party spoke with on it for 10 years thereafter. And the reparations recommendations from the TRC were one thing. Under the law, the promotion of reconciliation, the final decision was Parliament. My position happened to have been that individual victims ought to have been compensated properly on the basis of the damages they suffered, and I was not in favour of this broad brush community thing, right? The ANC in that committee didn't take that position, quite frankly, and none of them bothered to read the papers. So the decision was taken to give us 30,000 across the board to each declared victim, mm-hmm. and then to do the community stuff. The community stuff, however, is part of the TRC's own recommendations, right? So the Department of Justice, ever since I got back to justice, started nagging about the TRC, the department has been very good about doing something about the sloth and inactivity of the previous 8 years. I sympathize with Dr. Vivier, who's doing this job. I really would be interested, though, to hear who he interacted with in each declared place. For example, Aslan, which is my constituency, one such declared place. So, I mean, all of us are very alert and interested in knowing what it is, who was consulted, what is going to be recommended. The one thing I will say, so I think you must let LRC case progress. People are exercising their rights. But the one thing that really does distress me, having now said that the department has been good about doing something about, for example, the outstanding victims, and I know that you've been working really hard, and the official who used to be in charge has now sunk and submerged between the water, as is right with the settlement. But now, what distresses me is to see here, on page 60, that the regulations are still only at 12.5 completion. I mean, how many years have we been struggling now to get the relevant other departments, health, housing and the like, to complete this? Now here we stand full only at 12%. And there was one, so just address us on that if you don't mind through your chat. Which ones are at what percentage completion? Surely the last time you reported health had progressed, housing, and there's a third one. Education. And that's where there wasn't any progress, right?
But before you respond to G, I think, you see, I hear what you're saying about LRC. And so the question then is very relevant, which is, who does the LRC represent in their legal challenge? I'm not saying it was outside LRC. In their proposed legal challenge. Because you see, what's important for me in this exercise is whether the people of Alexandra and Mamelodi are satisfied. Clearly they won't be entirely satisfied. You're never going to achieve 100% satisfaction. But if Dr. De Beer and his team, in their engagement with these respective communities, reach some kind of agreement whereby the people in those townships and communities said, this is what we would like, who am I to say, no, you shouldn't do that? I mean, really, it sounds ridiculous, Dr. Mucheka. So, yes, we hold LRC in very high regard, but I'm curious to know, who do they really represent?
Yeah, well, this is also perhaps not our business. But all I'm saying is that if for argument's sake it's Pulamani, I can tell you now that their position does not comply with what's in the Promotion of Reconciliation Act or in the decisions of Parliament that followed thereafter. I mean, the deal is done. I didn't happen to agree with it, but there it is. Processes were properly followed, and you cannot now overturn that.
Chairperson, my address in Mamelodi is 12707 Mamelodi East.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a resident of Mamelodi.
Mm.
I was an activist in Mamelodi.
Mm.
Most of the people there, like Stanza Mbappe Way to the Crocodile,
mm.
I worked with them, I represented them. So LRC is not representing me there.
Mm.
And there are many others that I can bring to say they are not representing me. So are we saying that the department must go and assist the LRC to bring a case against them? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Because the LRC is a law firm, actually. It's a public interest law firm.
Public interest law firm.
Law firm. So if they represent their clients, they must find a way of representing their clients like any other law firm. But I don't think they should bring the work of the department to a halt for their own private interest.
You can still have other engagements outside the LRC. You don't have to wait for LRC. Because on the other hand, what's challenging is how you conclude the process. So in the meantime, you can actually come up with a and you can actually assist you to, in a consultative manner, be in the position to conclude and close the process.
Bring them, DNA, and other NGOs that are trying to, and not on all kind of points.
Thank you very much. I must indicate that last year we had a very big conference, call it workshop, not conference, everything was a conference, workshop, where the issue of I was just running through my mind trying to remember who represents who in all of these people that are upset about everything. But I think Khulumane could easily be the one that is represented by the LRC, if my memory recalls correctly. But having said that, we had this workshop, and the purpose of this workshop was to say to everybody, all in sundry, that we've looked at the request to reopen the closed list of the TRC, and it is not possible to reopen the closed list of the TRC, which is what Khulumani and the associated organizations have consistently threatened that we needed to reopen the closed list. So we've gone through the.
We've all been there, and they were also the people who went under the Alien Torts Act in the United States to try to get the hands on some.
General Motors, Mercedes.
So in the final analysis, then they had, because of those very difficult conversations, until we had that workshop, we were meeting with them individually and as blocks, trying to really see if we couldn't find each other, however remotely. But after realizing we couldn't, then we went the workshop route, so then we called everybody in and we said, this is it now, we want to move. But in this conversation of the open list and the closed list, at the heart of it are also regulations, because the regulations will regulate whatever it is that you want to pay out and or support and assistance that you want to give. And it was only after that that our minister, which was very late last year, that our minister was then able to sign off on the regulations on victim assistance, on basic education, as well as drug regulations, on assistance for victims, on higher education, and I can't recall now on the medical benefits. But I think that one, after the first finalization and just about signature, we received another query from health, and then we had to just finalize that query. And conclude that one. So at least the first three, health and education and basic and higher education, are somewhat, in fact, the minister has signed off on the two, the basic education one and the higher education, because their minister and everybody else and the relevant body that was then do the actual physical administration had agreed. We had looked at the tariffs of what the administrative and all of those things. So that those two are all but done, as I was saying in the introduction. All we have to do is to see them through the final governance process, and that's it. As for the housing assistance, there was agreement, in fact, even by the relevant minister. But given, and there's a small dynamic here which I would like the members to understand, at least to appreciate the difficulty we find ourselves in. There is the military veteran process, and there is the TRC process, and there's the normal social assistance process through the development. And in the military veteran process, the standard of the house, I think it's a house and a garage, and it has some kind of finishes. All right, I may not be getting this one accurately, I don't know what it is. But there is a format of a house.
Do you have a format of a
design of a house? There's a design house with certain finishes.
Yeah.
And the houses that are currently being built by the Department of Human Settlements are not necessarily that design. And that the military veteran house is more expensive than the RTP house, if I may put it that way. So there we have struggled a bit. Initially, there was agreement on the regulations, and then when the design issue came up, then we had to revisit the regulations. And it's a process, but we are very hopeful on that one.
Sorry, thank you. Very useful. I've taken notes, but what was the first thing you said? That the relevant minister has what the government signed off is?
on which one? On housing. Well, the relevant minister on housing initially had agreed, not signed off, but had agreed.
Right.
But when the issue of the different sizes and values came up, I think it
began on
the there was a bit of an discomfort.
Right.
Then we go to the integrated justice system. I'd like to just give you, as the Honourable House, just key areas that we are focusing on again. And I know last time we went through a very difficult conversation on the subject. We've indicated that we have a run out of words.
Why don't you do that? It's 25 plus.
And you've been talking on a big subject.
I'm suggesting on the moment that we give DJ a break. You can't be left 2 o'clock.
Lunchtime. 1:32 allow her to complete that job. So the department report is always so long and difficult.
Oh.
So if we give her too much time, the danger is that she'll walk away tomorrow.
No, she won't.
You're
assuming we're going to finish it before. We're not finishing it. She just wanted to drink what she can go.
Some of us were, of course, being a secretive office, but that does not include you, Chen.
No.
All right. Well, but it does include me, so I want to figure this out.
I know.
Just
break for lunch.
And
what time? 2 o'clock.